You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
From Milwaukee to Marshfield, where passion meets purpose and policy meets people, this is the Maggie Dawn Show.
We, as Republicans, as Democrats, as independents, as liberals and conservatives,
get ready to challenge.
Welcome, everybody. Happy Thursday afternoon. We have a boatload of news. Of course, we're going to be talking about the big, brutal bill that was adopted on the narrowest of margins last night in the dead of night while America was sleeping. The MAGA regime in the House of Representatives enacted the biggest cuts to Medicare, Medicaid, and emergency food assistance in our nation's history to deliver trillions in tax cuts to people who don't need them. We will discuss especially what are called, the technical term here are the manager amendments. These are the amendments that are asserted at the very last things, the very last little tweaks to a bill that is enacted or introduced by the, quote, manager of the bill, typically the representative that introduced the bill, a bunch of crud in there. We're going to get to that, but there's a bit of breaking news. And as your legal eagle on the air here during the weekdays, of course, you got Jim Santel, my fine guest frequently on Saturday mornings from 9 to 11, his show called Amicus, a law review. But I'm your legal eagle Monday through Friday. Let me share with you breaking news. Now, we are all aware of the Trump administration bungling about with all kinds of crazy personnel decisions. We know that Donald Trump has threatened to potentially try to, I don't know, maybe fire Jerome Powell, the chair of the Federal Reserve. We know that Donald Trump has been purging people left and right throughout the ranks of the federal government. Well, some of those purges included firings from the National Labor Relations Board. This is important. What does the NLRB do? It reviews disputes between people that are trying to organize into a union, the actual organized unions and employers. It is essential, though Republicans have been whittling away at labor protections and the power of the NLRB for decades, read since Nixon. So Donald Trump fired a pair of people from the NLRB. That, of course, was challenged in court. The district court found that the removal, which it says in statute needs to be for cause, meaning you can't just fire them because you don't like them or they won't sign some sort of imaginary loyalty pledge to the orange man in chief. He didn't provide any reason for their firing. He just fired them. So the district court found, yep, that's illegal. The appeals court said, yep, that's illegal. Oh, but no, ladies and gentlemen, the Supreme Court just moments ago approving a stay of those prior findings of the lower court. So in other words, allowing the firings to proceed pending final adjudication on the merits. I want to read a little portion of this interim Supreme Court order because the technicalities here are really, really important. Pretty technical. If you're just joining us, I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show. I am a lawyer and an economist. This is the kind of stuff that I like to dig my teeth into. Here is the Supreme Court's order from just within the last hour. The application, well, let me start here. The government applied for a stay of orders from the district court and the appeals court enjoining, i.e. preventing, the president's removal of a member of the NLRB and this other related Merit Systems Protection Board. The president is prohibited by statute from removing these officers except for cause, and no qualifying cause was given. You think, okay, well, He can't fire him then. Oh, no, 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 no. Supreme Court has a few tricks up its sleeve. They continue. The application for stay presented to the Chief Justice and referred by him to the court is granted. Because the Constitution vests the executive power in the president, he may remove without cause executive officers who exercise executive power on the president's behalf, subject to narrow exceptions recognized by our precedents. The stay reflects our judgment that the government is likely to show that both the NLRB and the MSPB exercise considerable executive power. But we don't ultimately decide the final question, blah, 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 blah. It goes on. The stay also reflects our judgment that the government faces greater risk of harm from an order allowing a removed officer to continue exercising the executive power than a wrongfully removed officer faces from being unable to perform his or her statutory duty. Charming. Charming. And they do actually tip their hat. This is extraordinary that the Supreme Court in this interlocutory appeal for preliminary relief, right? This is the emergency docket, the shadow docket, right? They actually talk about the Federal Reserve chair issue. This is extraordinary because this case isn't about the Fed chair, okay? Here's the Supreme Court. Finally, the fired people argue that in this case, that this case will necessarily implicate the constitutionality of for-cause removal protections for members of the Federal Reserve's Board of Governors or other members of the Federal Open Market Committee. We disagree. The Federal Reserve is a uniquely structured quasi-private entity that follows in the distinct historical tradition of the first and second banks of the United States, and so on and so forth. This is remarkable because the court is signaling, again, in this interim relief, this non-final order about a completely separate matter that, hey, Trump, you're not gonna be able to fire the Fed chair. So very interesting. It's also signaling what I think most prognosticators would have guessed is an extraordinarily broad reading of executive power by this Supreme Court, right? Not surprising, but so broad as to effectively, the court is overruling what Congress placed into law requiring for-cause removals and saying, Congress did that, that's not constitutional. This is quite an extraordinary ruling, though interim from the Supreme Court. It is, again, another ruling in this slow march to this very expansive interpretation of executive power, more open to this concept of the unitary executive, which used to be some 10 years ago, extraordinarily fringe. It is fringe no longer. Thanks for joining me on this Thursday afternoon. I'm Maggie Dawn, your legal eagle and economist on the air here on the Civic Media Radio Network. You want to join our conversation this afternoon? We got a jam-packed show for you. So much to talk about. You can always give us a buzz. Text or phone in 855-752-4842-855-75-CIVIC. I want to talk about the fact that two Israeli embassy staffers were shot to death last night after an event at the Israeli embassy. This is awful. This is disgusting. This is political violence. It is unacceptable in the United States. No matter how grave the atrocities that are occurring in Gaza, mass starvation, we're looking at most likely one of the greatest humanitarian disasters in recent history. And a president who, while he toured the Mideast in gilded palaces, accepting a $500 million plane from Qatar, signing business deals that half of which were already in place back from the Biden administration, didn't bother to stop in Gaza. This is disgusting, unacceptable, and anathema to any good faith American. Before I even got to talk about this news, My good friend John from Milwaukee, a conservative, was on the text line already saying this: the execution of the two Israeli citizens, I'll just read his text, is 100% the fault of left-wing media like 540 WAUK. The liberal media has normalized violence against conservatives and Jews. John, let me be clear here. No. No, not even a little bit. Political violence being normalized, sir, that would be the MAGA regime. That would be the insurrectionist in chief who interrupted the peaceful transition of power that resulted in the beatings of over 100 police officers who pardoned those who engaged in political violence. No, sir. No, sir. That is deeply wrong and misguided. I will say it again, political violence of any type is anathema to democracy. It is anti-American. It has no place. We resolve political differences in the ballot box and over the airwaves. Yes, rhetoric may be incendiary from time to time, John, but incendiary rhetoric is rhetoric. I have never, nor has anyone on this network, ever endorsed political violence. I wouldn't be here if any one of my colleagues did so. It is roundly condemned, as it should be, every day. The ones who have made excuses for political violence are in the MAGA regime. The ones who lied about the 2020 election to foment said political violence are on Fox News, admitting in court filings that they don't report news and that no reasonable person would ever believe the things that their commentators say because, of course, it's pure entertainment. Fox News, fake news that has paid hundreds of millions of dollars to plaintiffs because they lie. Those lies that contributed to the political violence where over 100 police officers were beaten, injured, serious brain injuries on January 6th. That is political violence. So is the violence that took the lives of these two Israeli embassy workers, two people who are about to get engaged. It is all abhorrent, and it should be condemned, John, and shame on you for trying to place the blame at the feet of people who dare question the MAGA regime and Donald Trump. 855-752-4842. 855-75-CIVIC. Breaking news. The man who killed those two people has been charged with first-degree murder, as well as murder of foreign officials, causing a death with a firearm, and discharging a firearm during a crime of violence, according to a court filing. 855-752-4842. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Well, as we are wont to do here on this program, we started off with quite a bang, breaking some news coming out of the Supreme Court. Other breaking news today: Harvard Student and Exchange Visitor Program has been decertified, so says constitutional scholar, Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, Kristi Noem. She sent a letter to them today, and it says simply this: I am writing to inform you that effective immediately, Harvard University's Student and Exchange Visitor Program is revoked. It goes on, as one might expect. Wow. Want to take some calls before we move on here? 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Ellen from Cedarburg, thank you for your patience, ma'am. Welcome to the show. What would you like to share? Ellen, are you there, Ellen? Hello. We'll try Ellen back again. Paul from Spooner on the text line saying it's Trump who wants to take Gaza and, you know, put hotels up there. These are challenging times. And what I hope, though John from Milwaukee and I disagree on much, the generous reading of his text into the show that I can provide is this. John wants to condemn political violence just like I do. And he wishes to join me in condemning the man who murdered two Israeli embassy staffers. Political violence has no place in a democracy, full stop. That's it. There's no more to be said. And whether John, my conservative friend from Milwaukee, it's your team, if we want to divide the world into teams, whether you perceive it's my team that endorses political violence, I want you to know from me, John, and every conservative listening, me, Maggie Dawn, I condemn in every way, shape, and form political violence. It has no place in democracy, and it has no place on this program. Let's take a couple callers. We've got Jean from Eau Claire. Hi, Jean. How you doing?
Oh, I'm hanging in there. I feel the same way you do. I feel the pain. And I tell you, I remember I had a hammer. Do you remember that? One of the stations in the state of Wisconsin when Pelosi's husband was assaulted. I mean, this is so sick. I've never seen, in all honesty, I'm 70, and I paid attention to my government for 20-some years live, and I have never seen, you know, the behaviors of the people with the R after their name, the megas, the hate, and going after people. I've never seen anything like this before. It is alarming. And then watching these people when they're, you know, you're the Congress, watching the House, watching the Senate, the hatred, yes, and the things that are being said and the idiocracy, it's unbelievable. And Kristi Noem, give me a break. I'm sorry, but, you know, when she writes about shooting dogs in the head, puppies, and I train hunting dogs, you just know, you train a dog, you don't shoot him in the head, a puppy. I mean, these people are unbelievable, Maggie. It's like watching a horror story. So
I hear you. I hear you, Jean. I do want to share with you all this. John and I, via the interwebs, the miracle of texting, we have had a moment of agreement. John from Milwaukee, my friend, my conservative friend, we have found agreement that we both condemn political violence in all of its shapes and forms. It has no place in a democracy. I have this to say about it, and then we're going to bring on some guests in the next segment. Political violence ends with us, with you, and with I, with me. We can do this. We can say to the extremist elements within our parties that will not be tolerated. So, John, to my conservative friends listening, let's make a commitment together to talk to our extremists, whomever you think is on your team that's out there on the edge, the fringe, engaging in political violence, threatening political violence. Let's agree, John, and all of my conservative friends, to tell them to stop. Let's reclaim the political discourse in this country. I love that John and I can disagree and that we can exchange these ideas. I count on the fact that John and I can do this and do this peacefully every day. Because that, the competition of ideas, the free exchange of sometimes deeply uncomfortable, yes, sometimes incendiary rhetoric, but that we all know that there is an ultimate bright line, one that we all have a responsibility to ensure is never crossed. It is all of our responsibilities, but that responsibility is exercised, it's fulfilled on a daily basis. And we fulfill that responsibility to know that in a democracy, in this American democracy, political violence will be rejected. We do that by policing our own. So we look to our own house. I think I remember some biblical verse about those who live in glass houses should be careful about throwing the stones. So to the degree anyone thinks that this murderer was emboldened by progressives or liberals, I condemn him. I condemn anyone that takes up arms in the name of political truth. My name's Maggie Dawn. Keep it locked. We'll be back with the Center for American Progress Action Fund right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Well, the big brutal bill has been passed by the House. Stay tuned to see what happens in the Senate. It sure is going to be a rocky, rocky ride. I have a fabulous guest with me next because one of the areas that I don't think has gotten enough focus is the impact of the big brutal bill and other so-called efficiency measures, what I'm going to call the billionaire overlord, post-pubescent, techno-bro slashes, is the impact of all of these things on veterans. And it is so important as we approach Memorial Day to be hyper-focused on this. So very thankful, very privileged to be joined by Allison McManus. She is from the Center for American Progress Action Fund. She is the managing director of their National Security and International Policy section. Prior to joining the center, Allison was the managing director at the Freedom Initiative, where she advocated for political prisoners in the Middle East and North Africa. Welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show, Allison, and thanks so much for making time. I know you're in D.C. My best wishes and condolences to the entire D.C. community. I know the embassies are embedded right within the whole Capitol framework, and it must be a really somber afternoon in Washington, D.C.
Thanks for having me, Maggie, and I really appreciate the sentiments that you offered in the last segment just about the heinous act of violence against these two embassy staffers. So appreciate your attention to this issue and you know, your audience being aware of what's happened here.
We will do our best, and we do our best together. So let's turn to veterans. We know that the campaign to basically break government and in somewhat haphazard, but also a comprehensively cruel fashion from the Trump administration, that they have targeted the Department of Veterans Affairs. Tens of thousands of folks are going to lose jobs. Let's talk specifics. What are the programs? What are some of the job eliminations, the RIFs, if you will, that have occurred specifically impacting veterans?
Yeah, thanks, Maggie. I mean, you know, this is an issue that I'm really glad that you're focusing on, because there's a number of ways that we can see that the Trump administration's agenda, we tend to call it the DOGE agenda, but I liked your formulation of the tech bro billionaire consortium.
Yeah, don't forget the post, barely post pubescent. It's important to paint the picture for folks.
You know, it's all in there. There's a number of ways that we've seen an impact on the veteran community. And first, I just want to give a little bit of an overview of like what the needs are of the veteran community. Who are we talking about when we talk about veterans? So there's almost 16 million veterans in the United States. I know you're in Wisconsin. There's around 300,000 veterans in Wisconsin. So we're looking at around 6% of the population. Many veterans, around half, are over the age of 65. veterans have really complex needs that differ from the rest of the population, whether these are health needs related to their service, that includes combat veterans, but any veteran, you know, may have different health needs because of the exposure that they had in their service. And then, of course, there's the mental health needs as well that are increased in a veteran community. Over 40% of veterans have been diagnosed with some kind of mental health or advanced behavioral health needs. The other thing I want to mention is veterans have complex socioeconomic needs. This is something that's often under-discussed. There's a bit of a stigma around it. 1 in 4 active duty service members are insecure. 11% of veterans, 1.2 million veterans utilize SNAP benefits. And veterans often utilize Medicaid a lot of times in as a supplement to other federally funded healthcare programs, particularly around their families.
I don't mean to be repetitive, but these statistics are worthy of repetition, Allison. Can you give us those stats about food insecurity, Medicaid usage, these other socioeconomic complexities that are frankly come together in a unique way for vets?
Yeah, absolutely. So when we're talking about Medicaid, 850,000 military members, so these are active duty members, use Medicaid in addition to TRICARE, which is the primary coverage that the military offers. That's including 220,000 children of active duty military. 3.4 million children of veterans are covered by Medicaid. So again, huge reliance on Medicaid, particularly as a supplement for military or veteran families. 1.2 million veterans live in households that utilize SNAP benefits. And this is because 1 in 4 active duty service members and 11% of veterans are classified as food insecure. Around a quarter of veterans are economically insecure, which means they may be above the poverty line, but are still not able to afford, you know, the essentials and so live in economic precarity. For a lot of veterans, for a lot of folks, joining the military can be an engine of social mobility, particularly for those who come from disadvantaged backgrounds, but it by no means suggests that you leave the military and that you don't still maybe struggle economically. So really what we have is a population that has increased needs and that is much more likely, frankly, to rely on federal benefits and as they well deserve. I mean, there's a population who has often faces these increased needs because of the sacrifices that they've made to the country. This is why the Department of Veterans Affairs exists. Over half of veterans utilize services from the VA. And again, sometimes these are healthcare services. These can be pension funds. These can be loans for housing. I'll reveal to the audience, my husband's a veteran. I'm in our home that we were able to buy with a VA loan. So there's a variety of different ways that the VA serves the veteran community. Now, sorry for that long-winded.
This is essential to the discussion.
Yeah, exactly. So just to clarify for the audience, like, why is the VA so important? Now, in terms of what we're seeing already, just want to be clear to distinguish between what's happened so far and the impact on vets versus what we see on the horizon, because it's already really bad and I'm really, really worried that this is going to get worse. So with the VA, so first of all, we've seen this DOGE agenda target federal workers across the government. Veterans constitute around 30% of the federal workforce. Some agencies have a higher proportion of veterans. Department of Defense, for instance, is almost 50%. VA is around 30%. So anytime that we hear about layoffs, anytime
picture
that we hear
a veteran.
Yeah, exactly. We can assume that this is going to impact veterans. Veterans do have some additional protections, but it doesn't mean that they're exempt from the harm to the federal workforce that we've seen across the board. At the VA, this is compounded because, of course, this means interruptions in service to vets. And so here we've seen all this flip-flopping. There's been hiring freezes. There have been layoffs. They've brought people back. It's like paralyzed the VA's ability to plan, to meet the needs. Even before the Trump administration, the Biden administration had tried to invest in making sure that the VA could meet shortfalls that it had in staffing, just to be able to meet the needs of vets. So this is an agency that was already struggling to meet the needs and now is further impacted. Just a couple of examples of where this has caused harm already. The Veterans Crisis Line, this is like a last line of defense for veterans who are in crisis. This is a life-saving group of folks who are facing now this decreased efficiency, spread thin, and this is actually impacting the efficacy of the Veterans Crisis Line to be able to meet the needs of those who are calling in. That's like an immediate harm. In the long term, we're also seeing the impact on research and development. So these are life-saving measures that can have impact far into the future, and not only for veterans, but a lot of the research that comes out that's funded by the VA, including things like CAT scans, the nicotine patch. These are breakthroughs that benefit the American people writ large. So this is like, we're already seeing that there's been impacts. And now what the administration's proposing, an additional 80,000 personnel that might be cut. So we could estimate that there's like been around 5,000 that have either been laid off or who have left the VA. We're already seeing what the harm is there. Multiply that to 80,000. This is absolutely going to be devastating to the services that veterans receive.
It's folks, this is Allison McManus of the Center for American Progress Action Fund. She's the managing director of their National Security and International Policy Group. I don't even want to, I always hesitate to even address the efficiency question, Allison, but efficiency means delivering the services or product that you need to deliver in the most cost-effective, you know, least amount of inputs required, right? What you have when you devastate workforces and defund massive programs is you do not have efficiency, you have destruction. And that's what's happening. It started, right, with the 5,000. I worked for a long time in government, and I know well our department's level of efficiency. And when we had major upticks in work, how incredibly stressed and burnout was an actual thing. I know folks that work in the VA. Burnout is an actual thing. My mom was a nurse in the VA. Burnout was an actual thing then. And we're about to see one of the largest layoffs in our nation's history out of the VA alone.
Stunning. Yeah.
We're coming up on time here, Allison, can you hang around for another segment?
Yeah, absolutely. Happy to.
Perfect. And thank goodness. This is so important. I do not want to rush. Folks, again, we've got Allison McManus. We're talking about the Trump administration's chainsaw to the systems and benefits that help support veterans in this country. Such an important discussion to have as we are approaching Memorial Day. Of course, Allison generously sharing that her husband has served. So really excited to have you with us. So we're looking at on the horizon the 80,000 potential additional layoffs on top of the 5,000. We're going to dig into what else is on the horizon. We're going to look at the hundreds of thousands of disabled vets and how the big brutal bill may be impacting them. All of this still to come. Keep it locked, because I know everybody listening knows at least one vet and cares deeply about them. If you do, keep it locked. This wonderful discussion continues on the other side. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Very thankful because our fantastic guest from the Center for American Progress Action Fund, Allison McManus, stuck around for a little bit extra, a little overtime with Allison, if you will. Allison, we've got 280,000 vets here in the state of Wisconsin. It's 6% of our population. We've been talking about what is still coming from the Trump administration that will impact vets. And that's not even to mention, again, as you did, all of these unique needs of veterans, the cuts that have already been made, as well as the fact that just vets are 30% of the federal workforce. And if you view it from the flip side, if we look at vets overall, 11% of vets have worked in federal government. So from either way, it's a huge proportion. What's coming? You talked about 80,000 potential additional layoffs. What else?
Yeah, so thanks, Maggie. Again, the layoffs, I think, are a huge concern, and particularly given, you know, not only the high proportion, not only the proportion of vets that are in Wisconsin, but also the fact that the VA operates all across the state. For sure, we can expect to see an impact there. You know, have to talk about this horrendous bill right now that's moving through Congress. Donald Trump likes to call this the big, beautiful bill. What does he consider beautiful? That's taking away Medicaid benefits. That's taking away SNAP benefits for the most vulnerable. And that includes military members. So 3.4, I mentioned this earlier, 3.4 million children of veterans are covered by Medicaid. 1.2 million veterans rely on SNAP benefits. That will for sure impact veteran families in Wisconsin. And why are we seeing that congressional Republicans and the Trump administration want to push this bill through? Of course, it's to facilitate tax cuts for the wealthy. So, you know, really here, we're not seeing this as anything related to efficiency. It's quite cruel. And I have to mention, you know, it's really beyond the pale to think about taking these benefits away from vulnerable veterans at a time where Trump is planning to spend $45 million to throw himself a birthday parade that's going to be on the backs of the military community. It's truly beyond the pale. The only last thing that I'll mention is just need to make a note, and I know, Maggie, because this is an issue that you care about, is that for the LGBTQI veteran community and for the LGBTQI active duty community, this is a group that has already suffered enormously. They've been disparaged despite, you know, serving the country honorably by the likes of the Secretary of Defense, Pete Hegseth. This is also a community who has advanced complex healthcare needs, and so will be disproportionately affected again.
Thank you so very much, Allison. I look forward to talking with you again, perhaps focusing a bit the next time on the Mideast and the Israel and the ongoing situation in Israel and Gaza. Thanks so much. That's Allison McManus of the Center for American Progress Action Fund. And with that, I will bring out my special next guest, Jeremy. It's been a hot minute. So glad to have you back. It's Jeremy Janine, president and co-founder, contributor at UrbanMilwaukee.com. As goes Milwaukee, so goes the state. We are a microcosm. And Jeremy, this wasn't a microcosm. This was the whole big shooting match. The RNC, we finally have some actual numbers about the RNC's impact here in the state and Milwaukee. Tell us about it.
There's a couple key numbers. I know we only have a couple minutes, so I'm going to kind of drill down and stay with me. $321 million. Mm. That's the RNC host committee and Visit Milwaukee Commission report. They say that's the total economic impact. We then drill down further, $216 million in direct spending. So that's the money that you can actually find. If you went and actually commissioned a report, you can find somewhere $216 million being spent. The as goes Wisconsin, Milwaukee's microcosm point I want to get to is $75 million. So almost half of that $200 million in direct spending is a federal grant that paid for security. Well, how does that relate to Wisconsin? Because when you think about the Milwaukee economic impact, this was an event that had 4,000 some police officers. Milwaukee doesn't have half that many police officers. Many of those people came from across Wisconsin that $75 million went to pay police officers in La Crosse, Janesville, Fond du Lac, Appleton. They all brought that money home with them, probably at a premium rate because it was probably overtime work. And that money is now finding its way across Wisconsin. So if you're asking yourself, did the RNC benefit me? It's possible that money's in your community. There's lots of other questions we can now raise. The big one for me is if you look at sales tax collections in Milwaukee County in 2023 versus 2024, they actually went down during the RNC, and I think that's concerning.
Say that last part again. So as compared to 2023, Milwaukee collected less sales tax during the... What, did these people not buy anything? What the hell was happening?
Well, this gets into the thing the report doesn't touch on at all. We know this $216 million was spent. What we don't know is what wasn't spent. It wasn't if Milwaukee was going to be empty in that moment. There was always going to be a baseline of spending. I wear right. this other hat as a gift shop owner. We did, and we're downtown. We were close to the Pfister Hotel. We did well that week. We had a phenomenal last day of the RNC. But comparing it to the baseline in July, it's not like we went from zero to 100. We went from 90 to 100. So, okay, our sales tax collection went up. But if you look at restaurants at Bayview across the rest of the city, they're universally reporting bad sales during that period. And I think you're seeing that played out in the data.
Jeremy, thank you so much for explaining this. Milwaukee is microcosm, because when I saw the headline, I was like, ain't nobody I know that gets tips, speaking of tips, or nobody that I know that works in restaurants, bars, or owns them thought it was some great boon. They were all sorely disappointed, but I'm never disappointed when you join me, Jeremy. Thank you so much. Have a fabulous Memorial Day weekend, my friend. He'll be back next week. Coming up next, we continue our lead up to Memorial Day. We'll be joined by two gentlemen from the Disabled American Veterans. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.